Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and sugar-free. First-round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I remember we had a game at Concordia, and I took Jesse with me, and he was on the bench with us. And I just remember it was late in the game. It was a really tight game, and I'm on my knee with my board out, putting a play together, and my son is on his knee right next to me. Unbelievable feeling.
And our guest this week, Jesse Bowser. He is the athletic director at Chestnut Hill College, formerly was the men's basketball coach at Chestnut Hill. And Jesse, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So this time of year, as we're recording this early May, I guess putting a bow on the semester, and we were talking as you're walking in, you love this time of year.
Love it. Yeah, it's full of championships, graduations coming up, and the spring season is always like microwave cooking. There's a lot built into just a little bit of time. And a matter of fact, our men's lacrosse team is playing for a championship on Sunday, so going for their fourth consecutive in the CACC. So it's really exciting. But most exciting is like just the view of having some time off to relax and kind of take it all in again.
Did you always figure administration was your future? Was that a track you were interested in, or was it more of an opportunity and let's give it a shot?
An unbelievable opportunity that really came out of nowhere. I can honestly say that I don't know what I wanted to do. When I graduated college, I was a juvenile probation officer in the city of Philadelphia for 9 years. I was coaching part-time. I had just begun to start thinking about potentially just being a high school coach and working at a teaching at a high school, and Chestnut Hill College opened. Brian Morris, the legendary Speedy Morris's son, called me. Brian was the women's coach at the time. Chestnut Hill College was going Division II. And I'm sorry, they were going Division III, but they were going co-ed. And he called and said, Chestnut Hill College is going co-ed. I think you'd be great for the men's job. I was coaching at Philadelphia University at the time and thought it was a good opportunity to see if I could be a head coach. If so, I'll take it. If not, I'm going to go the high school route. And, you know, as things happened, I got the job. And then 4 years later, while I was being part-time coach, full-time probation officer, it was time to either get on campus and be a full-time coach, or I had to, again, start considering other avenues, because it was really difficult to be a part-time head basketball coach, check in on all everybody's studies, make sure the kids are doing what they're supposed to be doing, but most of the day in the streets of Philadelphia helping kids and trying to get them right. I got on campus as an assistant athletic director. I did a little bit of everything. I was washing uniforms, buying uniforms, getting all the equipment to all the coaches. We were a small staff at the time, so I pretty much had to do a little bit of everything. And Bill Stiles, who's the athletic director at Alvernia, who had hired me, kind of gave me a little bit of everything. But I was coaching the men's basketball team. 3 or 4 years into that, Lynn Tubman, the athletic director now at Muhlenberg, became the athletic director. And she called me in her office and said, do you want to get into administration or do you want to be coaching? And I kind of liked what was going on in the athletic department. I've always been a sports junkie, so she put me under her wing, and I started learning from her about the administrative side of it all while I was coaching. And 9 years after she got the job, she went to Muhlenberg, and I applied and got the job. So that's how I get, that was my route to athletic director, and I am so grateful and love it. At the same time, I wouldn't say that I always dreamed about it.
At what point do you really start to think that this is where I need to be? And was there something that crystallized it, or was it just you were just immersed in basketball, but immersed in the athletic department? You talked about doing a little bit of everything, and you just kind of really fell in love with having an impact on multiple different fronts.
The first time the athletic director position opened, I had been at Chestnut Hill full-time for a couple years, two or three. I went for the job. That was when Lynn got the job. And when I didn't get the job, I was really disappointed. But before I went for it, as a head coach, a basketball coach, and loving what I was doing, I called my high school coach, Steve Chadwin, who is legendary in Philly hoops from Abington Friends, and kind of talked to him if I should do this. Like, should I even consider being an athletic director? And the thing that he said to me in that conversation is kind of what kept me going. He said, you know, you love building teams. You love coaching basketball. If you become an athletic director, now you have 18 teams. You get to coach coaches. You get to have your hand in all that stuff. And at that point is when I started really feeling like, man, that's an unbelievable way to look at it. And you're right. I do. I love all sports. I do love coaching. I miss the part of building a team and building those relationships. But as the athletic director, you have the power to make relationships with different teams, make relationships with coaches, watch the things that you did wrong, and maybe you see some coaches doing some things wrong, and you can kind of mentor them along and teach them off of the mistakes that I made. So I didn't get the job, which was very disappointing. But then when Lynn Tubman took over, by the way, she's an amazing leader. She was so great at teaching me the steps without making me feel like this is overwhelming that while I was being led by her, I was in my mind knowing like, all right, this is something that I definitely can do and want to do, and it excited me. And so when I did get the opportunity again, when she moved on to Muhlenberg, I was all on it and ready to go and take that next step.
Given how much you were already at the table under Lynn, and even when you're coaching, because Chestnut Hill is too small, everybody's got a piece of the pie.
Yep.
Was there ever a point that you were overwhelmed? And you talked about, you usually literally use the word overwhelming, talking about how she wanted to prevent that. But was there ever a point when it's all on you that you're like, wow, okay.
I think in any job, you have days or weeks where you just feel overwhelmed. You know, I use imposter syndrome a lot with my colleagues. There are some days where you wake up and think, what am I doing? I feel that, you know, I see the program going in the right direction, but I don't know how this is happening because I don't know what I'm doing. So, yeah, that does happen. I do get overwhelmed from time to time. When it comes down to it, athletics is about building kids, building, you know, building team, having them learn how to work with others, having them learn how to work with their coaches. You know, everybody doesn't love their coach, but you don't always love your boss either when you get out of college. And what we're doing is we're building leaders so that when they leave college, other people have good employees. And I think part of the reason why a lot of companies hire college athletes is because they are used to dealing with all different kinds of people, all different kinds of personalities, being the best, having a lot of heartache, and being able to deal with all that and still perform. So, you know, I think that's super exciting, and that has never changed for me. So it makes my job a lot easier. It makes it really exciting every day to know, you know, that feeling on game day. I get it all the time because there's games every day once the seasons get going. And it doesn't matter what the sport is. We're just ready to go.
Is it safe to say that every day something comes across your desk that you didn't expect to come across your desk, say, at 8 o'clock that morning, like literally every day?
Yes. Yes. Safe to say. Yes. People say to me a lot, you know, what's your typical day? And I always laugh and I always have to think for a second and can honestly say there's no such thing as a typical day. You never know what's going to happen on a given day. You have appointments set up. You're supposed to go down and speak at KYW with Matt Leon and now your team's in the tennis championship, so you might not make it on time. And then the championship game is going longer than expected, so you have to reschedule. That happens a lot. And sometimes it's a student-athlete who's going through something. Sometimes it's a coach who's going through something. There's so many different things that go on, and that's what makes it really fun. And for the most part, at the end of the day, you're helping people get to where they want to be. And, you know, to watch kids come into college and have anxiety issues, have issues, you know, working with others, have attitude problems, and then see them sophomore, junior, and then senior year, these grown adult men and women that have great conversations, that are now mentoring new kids coming in that had the same issues they had. That is so exciting, and it's so fun to watch that I wouldn't change it for anything.
You mentioned juvenile probation officer for all those years.
How much does your experience from that, has that helped your toolbox as a coach and as an administrator? Because I can see a lot of the things you mentioned, push in the right direction. Hey, let's do this. Let's do the right things. How much has that part of your career helped you at Chestnut Hill?
I think you can't even measure how much it's helped me to learn how to work with people that don't have the same things that I had, that are going through things that I can't imagine, and really helping them work through their problems to the best of my ability, seeing all different kinds of families that don't have anything, families that have a lot, kids that are having the same kind of issues that my kids are having, but maybe live in a much tougher area, so that we're not going through the same things. Now I am at Chestnut Hill College as an athletic director. It's also seeing people from all different walks of life that have different issues. Mental health is so big right now. And so, you know, I'm always keeping an eye on my student athletes, forming relationships with them. I think it's really important to know a lot of people's names. So I'm real big on saying hello to people's names as I'm walking down the hallway all the time, going out to their contests and supporting them, seeing their face when they see their athletic directors coming to their games. That charges me up. But at the end of the day, like, every single thing I've done since I left college in terms of my work life has built me up to be able to be a good athletic director, because I know how to deal with so many different situations, different kinds of people. You kind of adjust to where you are. And I think it's probably, when I look at my route to becoming an athletic director, it's actually an unbelievable, you know, I'm trying to think of the word, progression up to where I am right now. I mean, I love athletics. I love working with people. I love helping kids. I started out, all my jobs have to do with helping people. And then when you get to athletics, it's fun because everything is just a game, but you're learning about life while you're playing these games. So, yeah, I think that my job as a juvenile probation officer in Philadelphia has set me up to do whatever I want in the field of athletics.
So now let's talk a little bit about your backstory. Growing up, were you playing everything? I know in college you were basketball and baseball. Were they always your focuses, or was it whatever was going on in the neighborhood or during the summer or whatever your friends were playing?
I grew up in Fox Chase in Northeast Philadelphia near the Fox Chase Playground, Eddie Pollock Rec, although it wasn't Eddie Pollock Rec when I was a child. I literally played everything. I would wake up at 9:30 in the morning, meet my friends out front. We would go up the rec with our stickball bat, a tennis racket, a soccer ball, a football, and a basketball, and I'm not exaggerating, and we would all play all day long. I would go home at 5:30 and eat. I would come right back up the rec, which was around the corner from my house, and we would just play. And it was either soccer between the posts on the basketball courts, or we were playing basketball, or we'd go over and play tennis, or we'd play, you know, we'd play fast pitch against the wall and the home run is hitting it into the pool at the Fox Chase Rec. I mean, I have so many great memories, but everything circled around sports, and it wasn't just one little thing. I went to LaSalle out of high school when I went to LaSalle to try to play soccer, basketball, and baseball. They were my three favorite sports. I made the soccer team as a freshman, got cut from basketball, got cut from baseball. They were my favorites. Sophomore year, came back, played soccer, got cut from those two sports again. And now it's really common for people to just jump from one sport, run school to another. But at the time, it wasn't that popular. But I loved playing sports, and I was only really playing one, and I wanted to play them all. I had an opportunity at Abington Friends because a lifelong friend of mine, Mike McCabe, was there at the time, and he was coaching and teaching, and he told me I'd have an opportunity to play. My Uncle Pat was talking to me around Christmas, my sophomore year, saying, like, you know, after you graduate high school and college, you're going to work the rest of your life. Do you want to not play sports? Because I was really struggling. I really liked LaSalle, but I wanted to play. So I left, went to Abington Friends, played soccer, basketball, and baseball, had an amazing couple years there, met some great people, always had great coaches, and ended up going to Philadelphia Textile, walked on as on the basketball team for Coach McGee, and then also walked on the baseball team and played shortstop for 4 years there, and everything, the rest is history.
When you switched high schools, how was it? I mean, obviously from an athletic standpoint, but at first, I mean, that's a tough age to change schools. I mean, you're not changing, you're not moving across the country or anything, but, you know, did you know anyone at Abington Friends, or were you kind of jumping in there cold from a social standpoint?
I knew Mike McCabe, who was the coach that brought me over there. I had visited a couple times, and one of my gifts that I've been given is that I always have I don't have a hard time becoming friends with people when I change. So although I didn't really know anybody, I got to know people really quickly. And another beauty of playing a lot of sports is that you get to know how to interact with others. So in that sense, like, I didn't have a long period of time where I was waiting to see. As soon as I started Abington Friends, I had soccer practice, and then I had basketball practice. So right off the bat, I have a bunch of friends and teammates. And so now, you know, there was definitely anxiety moving school to school, because when you're a teenager, you're not really secure with yourself, and it's kind of like, oh my gosh, are these people going to like me? But again, I think one of my gifts that I've been given is that, like, I don't have a hard time meeting people and becoming friends with them. So it didn't really mess anything up. I just kind of got right in there and started playing.
I'm curious, we talked about how being a juvenile probation officer helps you now. The idea that you were cut from teams in high school, that seems to be another thing that really would be helpful. It's obviously not by design, but you've got that experience of disappointment, of being told, no, you can't. And that can be difficult for 15, 16, even 20, 21-year-old to be told that. How much does that life experience, did you feel, helped you, even if you're not cutting kids? But, you know, sometimes you're telling a kid, hey, you're not starting anymore. You're not doing this. But you've got an ability to do it from experience with an empathy that maybe a lot of other coaches don't have.
I love that question, Matt, because I think those experiences also helped me in coaching. And as being an athletic director, when kids come to see me about their coach not treating them fairly, I do know what it feels like to be cut. I do know what it feels like to sit on the bench and go to practice every single day and not get a chance to play like I did at Philadelphia Textile. I was on the number one team in the country, and we had an amazing group of guys, and I didn't play at all. But I came to practice every single day and worked hard because I loved it, because I loved playing with my teammates. And practicing every single day was just a great way to stay in shape and play this. It was almost like going up the rec every day again. You know, we're going up, we're hooping all day. And in practice, I get a chance to play against these great basketball players. I had great teammates, Pat Chambers, who's the head coach of Florida Gulf Coast, Eddie Malloy, who's an NBA ref, Mark McCarthy, Mike Mescal. I mean, I can go on and on about the people that I played basketball and baseball with, and that is all about my experience. Now, as a coach, I thought that it gave me an advantage to have been cut before and to have been on teams where I didn't play, because I can relate both to the kids that are successful and to the ones that aren't playing as much, because I've done both. And I think that gave me an advantage. I think sometimes you see unbelievable players and they have a hard time coaching because they don't know that much about failure. They don't understand why some people don't know how to do a reverse pivot. They can't understand what don't you understand about going over the screen as opposed to under the screen, because some people it doesn't come naturally to them. So I think all those experiences, you know, through my life have helped me to be where I am. But getting cut in high school is something that I will never ever forget. All I wanted to do was play in the Palestra with a LaSalle uniform on, or any Catholic League uniform on. And it wasn't in the cards, but who knows? I might not be here had I made those teams. You never know. You know, everything. I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. And so I just chalked that up as another thing that happened to kind of set me up for what I'm going to do in my life.
You mentioned you didn't play a ton of basketball, but baseball, you really turned into a critical piece of the team. When did you realize that you were good and good at the college level? Like, you weren't just good in the neighborhood, but, you know, because you walked on and ended up being a four-year starter on the baseball team. Like, that,
yes.
That does, I don't care what level you are, that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. I always had a lot of confidence when it came to baseball. I played on a lot of great teams. I played in an American Legion team that produced a lot of college players. Where I played American Legion, Ruben Amaro played, a guy named Howard Freeling that was from Northeast High School, and Jesse Levis, who ended up going and playing for the Cleveland Indians. So I had seen major league players come through Fox Chase, and I loved it that much that when I went to Textile, I knew I was walking on, but I also knew that I could get a spot on the field because I played so many different positions. So basically, I was walking onto the field thinking, okay, what's open? And I loved playing shortstop. At that time, I believe the year before, they had a great shortstop named Dave Heineman who graduated. They were looking for a shortstop. So when tryout started, I went right to shortstop and made the team immediately. And Coach Don Flynn, rest his soul, put me at shortstop as a freshman as soon as I started, and I never came out. And it was a great experience. And I actually, after my sophomore year, felt like I had a shot to maybe make some money playing baseball. It's so funny now, the older I get, the more I'm like, I was crazy. There's no way I was going to be a professional baseball player. But I believed it at the time. Went to Coach McGee after my sophomore year and told him that I was just going to focus on baseball. And he asked me to stay. And he would give me scholarship money to stay because of what I brought to that team, the basketball team, even though I wasn't playing. The way I showed up for practice every day, the way I interacted with my teammates, the way I was able to watch a film with the team and then go out on the practice floor and do exactly what the opposing team was going to do. It was so valuable to him. He asked me to just stay another, you know, stay and play and be a part of the program. And that was, I mean, for Coach McGee to ask me to stay on his team was very fulfilling. And so I did that. And then my senior year, I was his captain. His first walk-on to ever become a captain. So that's another badge of honor that I hold dearly to my heart. And everything comes down to all of my life lessons throughout up until that point.
So you mentioned Herb McGee, legendary coach, more than five decades at Textile, Philadelphia University, Jefferson, all the same school. Did you realize in real time who you were playing for? And what I mean by that, you obviously knew you were playing for Herb McGee, but did you appreciate that you were being coached by an eventual Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer? Like, were there moments that it resonated, or was it one of those things that you knew he was a great coach, but down the road, it really kind of hit you like, oh my God, I had this incredible life experience that very few people get to enjoy.
The summer of my senior year going into freshman year at Textile, I got a phone call from Coach McGee, my high school good friend who had just finished his freshman year and was a stud at Textile, had gave Coach my name, said I was coming, and told him that he should give me a chance, whatever. So Coach McGee called me that summer day to let me know that he was going to give me an opportunity to be on the team. And I knew at that second who Coach McGee was. And so, yeah, it resonated with me immediately and every single day after that. You know, just being in his presence for the first practice was something that I knew in my heart that I'm learning from the best right now. And so I was just paying attention, and there were so many moments throughout my career playing there where, you know, whether it was like a pregame talk or a halftime adjustment, where I would just be sitting there listening to him and thinking to myself, I've never heard anybody talk about it like that. Like, oh my God. So that was where he was just genius. His understanding of how to move the ball, where to be, how to play is just something that you can't really explain. You kind of have to experience it. But to answer your question, yeah, I was very appreciative from the second he called me that summer and never took it for granted.
Let's say that you were born, instead of when you were born in 2003. Given the way you grew up playing all different sports, playing multiple sports in high school, how different do you think your track would be now, just given how so many kids, once they show an aptitude for something, they're kind of funneled into that one sport and that becomes the focus. How different do you think your athletic journey would be if it was something that you had gone on as a player the last 10, 15 years instead of when you went through it?
That's such an amazing question, because I really despise the fact that some kids now only play one sport. I think that it's so important for kids to play as many things as possible. So I don't even like to – I've never thought about that, Matt, to be honest with you, because I loved playing so many different things. I encourage athletes at Chestnut Hill to play multiple sports if they can. Some coaches don't really like that. I think that it's important for their growth to – use different muscles, play different sports. And at the end of the day, you're competing. And so, like, if you're good enough to compete in multiple sports, I feel like you should do that. So I'm glad I was born when I was born. I'm glad that my trajectory is what it was, because now that you're asking me that question, I can say I've never thought about that. But if I had to think about it, I definitely wouldn't like it as much, because I loved playing everything. And I feel like I got so much out of that because I met so many different people over the different sports. As I was getting into college is when it started to be a little bit more like, if you're really good at this one sport than the other, you start paying attention to that. And now it's gotten to a point where, you know, you have soccer players, you have basketball players, you have baseball players, and you have lacrosse is a big, volleyball, track. So there's so many different things now, but it's a shame, I think, that kids figure out what they're, you know, they're good at this sport, so they just go and do it. I mean, I think kids should be playing as many sports as possible.
As a player, either baseball or basketball, when you think about your athletic career in college, what are the first couple of moments, games, guys, whatever, that kind of come to mind?
Some of them I can't repeat on radio, but I know that there was one situation that I go back to. My freshman year on the basketball team, we were number two in the country. We made it to the Elite Eight. I actually missed winning the regional at Millersville because I was down in Florida with the baseball team. But when I came back, we went to Springfield, Massachusetts. We were playing in the 8 o'clock game. We were the fourth game. We were on a collision course to face Cal State Bakersfield in the Final Four, who was undefeated at the time. And we had one loss, and it was to LaSalle. Kareem Towns, great shot at the end of a game at the Civic Center. We had, like I mentioned, some of the people that were on our team, and that team was what really has me where I am today. And I say it a lot. I think that was the year that I really fell in love with team sports, because those guys were such great, fun people to be around, and they included me. I was the 13th man on a 13-man team. The night before the game, we always, at the end of our shooting practice, we always did, Coach McGee would call them back in the days, and we'd have to shoot. We would get 3 seconds to shoot from half court. They'd throw you the ball, and you have a half court shot. I was the last one going. Nobody made it. If we made it, we got extra for dinner. So I'm the last one shooting. 3-2-1, half court shot, bank swish, jump up on the table. The guys rip my jersey off. They're carrying me off the field. We're cracking. We had such a great time. And then the next night, we're about to play an 8 o'clock game. The game before us goes into 3 overtimes. We're so excited to play in this game, and the overtimes just keep on pushing it back. But there was a lot of fun things that were going on in the locker room at the time that was like, you could feel the anxiety building the longer the game was getting ready to start. But at the same time, Pat Chambers, Eddie Malloy, Mike Mascola, Mark McCarthy, Gene Haith, like those guys were so funny and so tuned into each other that I just remember laughing a lot. I don't remember even what was being said. I just remember always laughing, always feeling good. And I think that's why I got into athletics, because I always want to, as a coach, give somebody else the same experience that I had with that team that year. And I had so many great experiences over the course of my college career with both basketball and baseball. But that one always stood out because it was a really special time. I was like, you know, again, 13th man on a 13-man roster in Springfield, Massachusetts. We're at the Shriners Hospital, and we're sitting there meeting with sick kids, and I'm being treated like they don't know that I don't play much at all. You know, and just to feel that importance, because being a part of the team that was that good, kind of set everything up for me.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Chestnut Hill College Athletic Director Jesse Balser in just a moment. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com. Best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Jesse Balser, Director of Athletics at Chestnut Hill College.
So when does coaching enter into the thought process? Were you always going to figure you were going to coach something? And what was it that drove you to want to coach? Was it just the love of sport and wanting to stay with it, and coaching was just kind of the, you know, when you weren't drafted by the Phillies, what coaching was the next logical step?
Actually, I did not think that I was going to like coaching. I loved competing so much that I, at the end of my college career, I wasn't really even thinking about coaching. As soon as I did graduate, though, I went back to Abington Friends and coached a high school basketball team with Mr. Chadwin and Mike McCabe, who had got me there. He was still there coaching with Mr. Chadwin. And I was an assistant and had a good year. It was fun. It was okay. I also was coaching baseball at Community College of Philadelphia with Terry Tobin at the time, who was a good friend of Larry Conte. And I liked coaching basketball a little bit more. That second year, Mike McCabe, who brought me to Abington Friends, got the head coach job at Lower Moreland High School, asked me to come with him and be his head JV coach. That was when it all changed. I told him that I would do it. We sat down a number of times, and he showed me how he gets organized and how he gets ready for the season. I still wasn't all in. We started practicing, and then once I started seeing kids getting better each day, and once I realized when I woke up the day of a game, I had the same feeling as when I was playing, that's when I knew I was hooked. And so I coached with Coach McCabe over at Lower Moreland High School for a couple years as the head JV coach. And then a spot opened up on Coach McGee's staff. And I figured, you know what, let me take this to the next level and see if I can coach in college and learn from a Hall of Fame coach. And did that. And then I already told you how it ended.
Was it a transition for the dynamic to go from player to member of the staff with Coach McGee? I know there was some time. It wasn't like you moved over a chair, you know, as soon as you graduated. But was there any kind of a transition, or do you kind of feel like almost your role as a player, you were kind of a coach because he needed you to be a leader. He needed you to do things the right way, you know, and you talked about how important that was to him. Did that make, because sometimes that can be a tricky change of dynamic when you're kind of changing roles under somebody like that. What was it like for you?
Well, anybody that knows Coach McGee knows that you're not really there that much to be heard. You're there to listen and learn. And so the transition was not difficult at all. I think the fact that I knew him so well was an absolute advantage for me. But I knew when I was going over onto his staff that I was going to watch and learn. And so, you know, as it turned out, Chuck Hammond, who is now a VP at Goldie Beacom College, he and I became coaches on Coach McGee's staff around the same time. And so I had a good friend of mine right there with me. So, no, it wasn't hard at all. I think it could have been a little more difficult had I gone directly into coaching at the college after I graduated. But I think a few years of high school coaching got me some skills in coaching. But then when I came back, there really wasn't many guys that I played with, if any, still on the team. So there wasn't really that transition where I have to kind of find that line with these guys I used to play on the same team with and now have to coach them. I came right in and I was able to, again, build relationships right away with some of those kids, which I think is a strength, and just kind of listen to Coach McGee and how he sees the game and learn how to be a head coach.
Biggest thing you learned from Herb McGee?
Family is everything. This is a true statement. He, as much as he knows about basketball, the thing that he preached most was how important that family is and how important it is to treat your loved ones with a lot of love and respect at all times, because things happen. And so despite, you know, so many things I learned from him on the court had to do with basketball, and that was great. But I, when I think of Coach McGee, I always think about the things he told me about being a family person And so that stands out the most than anything else that Coach McGee ever taught.
So let's talk about when you get the job at Chestnut Hill, and you talked about you get the call that Chestnut Hill's going co-ed. You're starting a program, and you're pretty young. What are you, 30-ish when you...
29.
29?
Yeah.
Did you know what you didn't know as far as everything that you were going to have to do to put this together? Because I think it's one thing to become a head coach at that age that is a lot, but you're like, there's no playbook from the last guy that you can pull out, like as far as where even like the team stayed when they traveled somewhere. Like, you know, how much was that just a roller coaster that first year? Not even the X's and O's, just putting the pieces together to make sure that everything's on time that has to happen.
That was a bit of a challenge, Matt, but I loved it. That was really exciting. Again, I'm 29 years old when that happens. At 29, you have all kinds of energy, all kinds of ideas. I'm an optimistic person to begin with. I'm always finding the good in things. So I was never concerned. The biggest thing for me was, all right, I need to get a bunch of players now because there's literally no men. It was an easy sell on one hand because you're coming to a program, you're coming to a school that has about 360 women left and there are no men. Would you like to come play basketball there? It wasn't a tough sell. From recruiting it at Philly U at the time, I had a lot of connections already, so I knew what players were around. But Danny Williams, who was the head coach at Holy Family for a long time, gave me a call. And I didn't even know Danny at the time. But he called me when he heard that I got the job. He started the men's program at Holy Family. And what he said to me was, don't chase wins, chase character kids. The wins will come, but you got to build your program with kids that are going to do things the right way. If you're going to try to just like win right away, it's going to be difficult. Never forgot that. And so as I'm recruiting, that's all I'm thinking of. Obviously, I want talent. I was able to get the kid Isaac Greer from Cardinal Doherty. Cardinal Doherty had those teams with Shane Clark and Kyle Lowry and Deshaun White, Sean Bowling, Bilal Ben. I mean, they were loaded. And I got a few of those guys from Doherty. Coach Heimerdinger was a great coach. I got a kid from Mike Devine, who was at Archbishop Ryan. And probably the first person that ever signed with my program is probably one of the best character people that I've ever met is Dan Burke, who is the head coach at Wilmington University right now. And oddly enough, Coach Shirley, the athletic director and women's basketball coach at Jefferson, handed me a tape. It was a tape, an actual VHS tape. Right after I got the job, I was still coaching with Coach McGee. And he said, it's a kid from Pottstown. He goes to Pius. I'm not sure if he's going to score 1,000 points, but he's a great kid. I know his grandfather, all this other stuff. Dan Burke, his grandfather was a Villanova guy. Dan's a Villanova guy. Dan and I talked a lot, and that recruiting process I remember to this day. It was the year that Carmelo Anthony was a freshman at Syracuse, and I remember talking to Dan before the tournament as I'm recruiting him, who do you like? And I remember talking about Carmelo Anthony. But those are the things about coaching that I love the most. And to take it back to what your question was like, I never really felt overwhelmed because I was just more excited about this opportunity to put my own team together and compete against other schools. And there was a lot of talk. I did schedule a little bit too tough for a first-year program. I thought we could beat anybody. You know, like, what the heck? I got some good players. We're going to go play against these teams. And it worked out okay. We ended up 12-14 the first year. But Isaac Greer came from Doherty, and he ended up scoring 2,095 points in his career. And I was fortunate enough to find some really good players that first year. And, so I really was not overwhelmed by that as much as some of the other things that you get overwhelmed by.
Do you remember your first win as head coach at Chestnut Hill?
Yes, I do. I do. It was at Alvernia. We were playing Penn State Berks. We had lost to Alvernia on opening night and came back in the day two of the consolation round. And yes, I remember remember some really funny things that happened during the game that I can't say on film on the radio right now. But I remember my assistant coach, Paul Visa, who's also a juvenile probation officer right now, keeping Philadelphia, keeping us safe. But we had some great times. What I do remember is that it was Penn State Berks at Alvernia, second game of my career.
What did that feel like in the locker room? You had built this. You just won a college basketball game as a head coach. Like, was it relief? Was it jubilation? Or was it all, okay, that's great, what's next? Like, where were you?
That's great, what's next? Like, everything that we've talked about, building, winning, building team, is coming together. Who's the next game? The next game, I believe, was our home opener against Valley Forge Christian at the time. And so it was just getting ready for the next game. I remember being really excited. As any head coach knows, winning a game anytime is the best feeling. It doesn't matter who you're playing. It's about getting wins. And it was no different. But I don't remember it being any, you know, I can't sit here and tell you I remember the locker room. I remember, you know, we didn't go crazy. It was a win, and it was time to move on.
How long do you feel like it took you as a head coach at Chestnut Hill to find your rhythm where, not that you had it all figured out, I don't mean, but that you had your arms around it? You kind of understood what went into the job. You knew what it took to have success, and there's always things that pop up that you're not expecting. But where you kind of felt like you had a real, real handle on being a college basketball coach. Was it like that first year, or did it take a couple years for you to find your true rhythm, you think?
I don't remember exactly how I felt. I don't remember ever feeling I was in over my head or feeling that, like, this is going to take a while. Oh, I think I have it now. I feel like as soon as I started coaching, within that first week of having my team together, I had this feeling of, like, it's us against everybody. And I just remember that the most. I remember kids that I coached and what was going on in their lives when they came in. And I remember, you know, I remember certain games. But I don't really remember that feeling that you're asking about right now, because I feel like I had confidence from the moment I became when I was selected as the head coach. I felt like I had the confidence to run this program. I certainly didn't even know everything the day I left coaching. So you're always learning something. But I never had a feeling that I wasn't worthy of this, or when am I going to know what I'm doing? You know, it comes down to having the right players, good enough talent, and then getting them to work together. But I don't remember when I felt like it just came together for me.
Did success hit differently as a coach than it did as a player? Was it a different type of feeling when you won or things came together?
Yes. Winning as a coach definitely feels a lot better than as a player, if I remember correctly. And probably that has to do with, as the coach, you're putting your team together to compete against a whole other team. When you win a game as a player, you're part of a bunch of other guys that did what they had to do to win a game. So I think there's a lot of satisfaction that comes out of winning. If I could go back into my younger years and teach myself something that I didn't know then, is to not take the wins so great and not take the losses so hard. People always talk about it. Coaches talk about it to our players, is to kind of stay as level as possible. Have a short memory. Don't get too high with the highs and don't get too low with the lows. I didn't do a great job of that as a head coach in my younger years. I was very emotional. When we won, I was so excited. I could stay up till 4 a.m. to talk to whoever wanted to talk to me about what happened in the game. When we lost, I had a really hard time letting go of what we did wrong, what I did wrong. And I think that definitely hindered my ability to, like, move on, you know? But overall, I think as a coach, those feelings were a lot stronger than when I was a player.
Now, when Chestnut Hill started, you guys were D3. So when was the first time you end up in the conference with Jefferson? So when's the first time you coach against Coach McGee? How many years?
I believe it was year three. It might have been year four. Because what happened, we were Division III from 2003 to 2007 in the NEAC. And we had good teams in that league. We played against Phil U. I believe it was their senior year. Coach played us in a non-conference game. They beat us by like 36. Absolutely dog walked us. And it was kind of like, man, we got to come play against these guys every game. But that was a great challenge. That was probably my favorite feeling as a coach, aside from winning a game, was every single time we played Philadelphia University, whether it was home or away, because you know you're playing against the best. And yeah, it was 3 years before we got to actually play against him in a real game, and I actually thought we had a shot. And they pretty much erased that that hope in about 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Was it just, aside from how the game, was it surreal at all to be on the opposite bench as Herb McGee the first time? And you end up playing him a lot because you're in the conference, you know, but like, did you have moments where you looked and went like, wow, this is incredible?
Every time I looked around the crowd, and I remember there was a security guard named Leon at Philly that was just a great, great guy. And to come back in there with my team and see him standing there by the door, I'm talking to him, I'm talking to the maintenance staff that I saw. Like, I was just happy to be there. So, yes, surreal. I love, you know, when I'm looking down and watching Coach McGee, it was kind of like, like their talent was just so much better than ours, and obviously he's so much of a better coach of basketball. Surreal, yes, but you know, competitively speaking, I don't think at the time I was more concerned about trying to win. I wasn't in awe like, oh, this is so fun, because we got cooked. But I did definitely take in the fact that here I am where I played, coaching against my coach who is going to be in the Hall of Fame at the time. That was amazing.
What is your favorite memory from your coaching years?
Whew. Probably has less to do with actual games than it does. You know, my kids, I have three kids, and they all grew up while I was coaching at Chestnut Hill. So my favorite memory has to be coming out before a game and seeing Isabella, Jesse, Angelina at the game. And then Angelina, probably the most. Isabella always ran over to give me a hug before and after the game. Jesse would come on the row with me. Let me back up a little bit. My favorite memory has to do with my kids, but I remember we had a game at Concordia, and I took Jesse with me, and he was on the bench with us. And I just remember it was late in the game. It was a really tight game, and I'm on my knee with my board out putting a play together, and my son is on his knee right next to me. Unbelievable feeling. I remember like looking over, seeing him there, and was like, man, what a blessing. Like, I am coaching Division II college basketball, and my son is able to sit right next to me in the middle of a game and just watch what I'm doing. So, you know, again, it goes back to what Coach McGee said about family, and I think that had a lot to do with it. I was just, all I cared about really was seeing my kids there, them being so proud that their dad's a college coach. They thought that was the greatest thing ever. And I'll never forget any of those times. And like those are my best memories as a coach.
So when you transition to administration and you step away from coaching, how difficult was it? Because, I mean, that program's your baby. You built that. And you're still there, but you're handing it off to somebody else. I would imagine it would be incredibly difficult to just watch other people make decisions with something that was so intimate to you. And yeah, you're still there, but you're not there. How tough was it to allow the next generation to do their thing? And were there any moments where you had to stop yourself from, hey, have you thought about, or we used to do? Because I would think it would be so difficult to, you'd have to cut that off at the pass constantly.
You would think that, except the one thing that you're not taking into account was my last 3 or 4 years were really brutal years. We did not win a lot of games. And as I told you before, I did not handle losing very well. So for 3 or 4 years, I was really struggling with like, am I even good at this anymore? I'm really good at finding talent. I'm really good at developing the relationships. But the basketball thing, what the heck is going on? We're not winning many games. So I did not, when I was doing this search, I did a great search for the next coach. As it turned out, my last game was coached on February 28th, and I think it was March 12th, everything stopped because of the pandemic. So my retirement from coaching basketball at Chestnut Hill College was immediately right next to the pandemic. So I had to do a search during the pandemic. We didn't even know if there was going to be anybody playing. We didn't know if we were going to be playing. Are we going to be playing with masks? So we had to take time out every 5 minutes. So after a great search, and I had great candidates, I hired a guy named J.J. Butler, who was a former player and assistant coach of mine who had gone to Susquehanna for a few years to coach, and I brought him back. I think he was 27 years old when I hired him. But I hired him because not only did he love basketball and he was great at it and he saw the game in a different way, but he was a great human being. And I knew like that was the thing that I wanted to make sure that this program stays in line with the way people look at us. Tough kids, smart kids, they compete, and they do things the right way. So knowing that I had JJ there to take over, of course, and again, I appreciate the fact that he would ask me about things as they were going along, so I could give him input. He had some of the guys that I recruited on his team. But I think that pause during the pandemic when there wasn't any basketball. So there was a really long period of time between when I stopped and when they started playing again that I think a lot of that wore away. And because I knew that I hired this really good young coach, that I wasn't jealous or it wasn't even difficult for me to let him do his thing, because I felt like, you know what, I did the best I could for as long as I could. But again, those last few years of not winning many games wore on me a lot. So like, I didn't really miss it that much. I did miss being in the gym with the guys. I did miss forming that bond. I was sad that like my kids look at me not as a basketball coach anymore, because that was a big deal for them. But in terms of like the actual part of JJ taking over the program, I was totally fine, because I think, you know, he had great coaches with him, and I could tell right away he cared about these guys the way I cared about those guys, and that the program is in amazing hands. So it was good. And now I have 18 teams, so I'm able to focus on all the different school, all the different coaches and athletes. I'm getting to know everybody a little bit more. So it was actually a really good transition.
And my final question, how much has it meant to you to do everything you've done, but to do it all here basically at home? You've dropped so many names of guys that have made an impact on you that you hope you've made an impact on, all these different places. And every time you mention one, you start to smile because you can tell how much it meant to you. How much has it meant to you to be able to have this journey and to kind of share it with everyone you love in the place that you love?
Priceless. Philadelphia is the greatest sports town ever, and I belong here. So when I first started as a coach, I was under Coach McGee, and then I became a head coach. All I wanted to do was be a Big Five coach. I remember a couple times being in family court and reaching out to Phil Martelli to see about basketball operations jobs. And I remember meeting Jay Wright for the first time, and he was so nice. I was totally in awe of everything, but I was in. And to be able to say that, like, I coached basketball in Philadelphia is to me the best badge, because this is a tough town and everyone's so passionate and everyone's very knowledgeable. You're not going to fool anybody. If you don't know what you're talking about, you're not going to fool anyone. So that's a great question, Matt. And that's probably the cherry on top of everything, was that I got to do it right here in Philadelphia. After a couple years at Chestnut Hill, I didn't even want to move on to a Big Five school. I loved what I was doing, who I was working with, and what was going on. So it didn't matter. I'm in a Division II school in Philadelphia coaching, and that's just as good to me as anything else. I was able to be around my kids all the time, and that meant a lot.
Jesse Bowser, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you, Matt.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Many thanks to Jesse Bowser, athletic director at Chestnut Hill College, for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.me for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.